Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio today Professor Arnold Cassola. Professor Cassola has been on this programme before to talk about his books. We have a new publication to talk about today. But just a few words about my guest. Professor Cassola is Professor of Maltese and Comparative Literature at the University of Malta. He has also taught at the Universities of Catania and Roma La Sapienza. He's a co-founder of the Alternativa Democratica, the Green Party, that was back in 1989, and was elected Secretary General of the European Green Party in Brussels, and a member of the Italian Chamber of Deputies between 2006 and 2008. He's the author of many academic publications, books, papers. Amongst his first were the Biblioteca Valiceliana, Regole per la lingua maltese, that was in 1992, and followed later by Il mezzo vocabolario, Maltese Italian del Settecento, to his latest, Lost Maltese Newspapers of the 19th Century, which we've spoken about on this programme before, Malta, People, Toponymy, Language. That was in 2011, last year. And the publication which we're going to consider today, The Belgian Memoirs of a Maltese Intellectual, Giovan Francesco Buonamico, 1639 to 1680. Welcome, Professor Cassola.
Thanks to you and to the listeners.
This gentleman, Giovan Francesco Buonamico, is a very interesting character. You seem to enjoy ferreting out unusual people, unusual subjects, not unknown, of course, as Buonamico is quite a known figure, but not somebody who has been researched very deeply. What triggers your interest in somebody like him?
Well, I mean, I suppose even the older I grow, the more I'm interested in older stuff. So the further away from my lifetime, the more backward I want to go in the history of Malta, I would say, because this is a literary thing, but not necessarily literary. It's a travelogue we are talking about here, which is interesting in a way because Malta does not have a history of travel writers that have been studied. But we do have had travel writers. For example, just think of De Soldanis, who had written his diary of his travels to Rome. It's lost, alas. If we think of Leonardo Abela in the 17th century, he had been sent by the Pope to Syria, and he wrote his Relazione del Viaggio a Monte Libano, which is published. we have Chantar also had written his accounts of his travels. So maybe this Buonamico has a whole volume, 146-page volume in Italian. Obviously, at that time, they used to write in Italian, of his travels in Europe. It's meant to be an eight-year-old travelogue. He spent 8 years going around Europe. When he was quite young, he graduated in Europe. He became a doctor in Aix-en-Provence, it seems, and he studied in the University of Louvain too, Berlin, Amsterdam. So he was really he really went around and seemed to enjoy it too.
He was a doctor.
He's a medical doctor. When he came back at the age of 24, 25, I believe, he was appointed doctor of the Order's Galleys, medical doctor of the Order's Galleys. And in fact, these memoirs too, I obviously just tackled the Belgian part. And there are various reasons for this. The first thing was talking to the Belgian ambassador, asking me whether any past relations between Malta and Belgium. And immediately Buonamico cropped up because of his Belgian part in his travels, apart from probably having graduated from a Belgian university too. And then I realized it was 350 years this year that he went to Belgium and the Netherlands. So 350 years. And then I lived in Belgium for 7 years. So in a way, I think I can identify myself
So you got to know the places from. That he visited, you know.
Some of them, not all, to be honest. For example, Bouillon, the first town he mentions, which he describes as Borgo Mediocre, as something he didn't like, a place he didn't like, but then gave him something which was exceptional for him. He'd never seen it before. A field of, what is it, barley malt for the making of beer. He had never
seems
seen.
Seems to have liked this beer idea.
Yes, he is the first time that Bonamico actually sees a field where the malt is growing, whatever it is. I don't know exactly, is it barley or will they make
I'm not a beer expert.
Beer from. And in order to explain it to his readers, now keep in mind that this has always remained a manuscript, so it's never been published. I don't know whether it was meant for publication, his Memoria di Viaggi. But because he published various other things, but this has not been published. Anyway, he compares it to a field of un vigneto, to a vineyard in back home. So he's obviously thinking of the reader, he's being reader friendly, and in order to explain what this field looks like in Belgium, where they make beer. Mm. He compares it to a
Perhaps it was hops he was seeing.
Hops, yes, it's hops. Yes,
but is grown, and it's higher than vine plants, but it's grown in the same way along wires and
He compares it to it exactly, and so on. So all these things combined, obviously, and then the Belgian National Day was on the 25th of July. We were talking about this around February. So I said, okay. Let me try and go and transcribe because the text had not been transcribed yet. There's the Dutch part has been published by Giovanni Mangion in 1971, because Bonamico is known. This work is known. It's in the public library. It's nothing. Yes, right? And now I've happily found out that a student in the Italian department has also now, this year, worked on a transcription of the whole text. So there should be now a whole transcription of the whole Memoria in Italian, in a university thesis in the Italian department.
The Belgian ambassador, I think on the occasion of the launch, describes Bonamico as a great pioneer, a bold traveller, and an astute observer, a man who was curious about everything around him and concerned about the well-being of his peers. That sort of caught my imagination. I thought that's interesting, that he should have looked also not only at the hops fields, but at the social milieu at the time.
The cultural milieu, the political figures. So you can see, first of all, that he's a unique figure in the sense that I think it's difficult to find a Maltese person in those times traveling for so much. 8 years in Europe. Unfortunately, the part on Italy, Sicily and Greece, islands also, has been lost. It's in another manuscript which has been lost. But hopefully one day it'll turn up in some private collection. So that's the first thing. A person who went around Europe for 8 years, so obviously he opened himself up to a European mentality, even though Europe at that time was not the Europe we know of today. But he went to France. All these names change, obviously, because Netherlands did not exist. Belgium did not exist. He calls it Le Fiandre, in fact. And then he calls he includes in it even parts of Germany and parts of France. And Liège he compares nearly more to France than to Belgium. Because there were these 18 regions in the lowlands, Holland, etc., and he calls them more Paesi Bassi, etc. So obviously he learned a lot in life.
Did he have private means? How did he manage to spend 8 years wandering Europe?
He was probably quite a rich person, came from a rich family, I suppose. His father was actually French, who married in the Cotonera area, and he went away around the age of 17, 18. And he studied and graduated in Aix-en-Provence, sure. He studied in Berlin, he studied in Amsterdam, he studied in Belgium, in Louvain, it seems, though there are some people who doubt it. In fact, I point that out in the book. And what is strange, if he graduated in Louvain, he mentions professors at the University of Louvain, philosophers, lawyers, artists, but does not describe Louvain. So, which is a very maybe he was living in it and therefore wasn't so. But we know because one of the paragraphs is entitled "Viaggio da la Germania," I think, up to Lovanio. So he was going to Louvain. It was a destination, but he did not describe it. He described Ghent, he described Brussels, he described Bruges, Malines, or Mechelen, Antwerp, which he considers to be the most beautiful city in Europe.
In fact, I was going to mention as fulsome in his description of Antwerp.
Yes, Antwerp, unlike Bouillon, which is great for its beer, but Borgo mediocre, città mediocre. Antwerp is a beautiful city, but even other cities, Bruges, the bridges which he notices. The fountains are a characteristic of Brussels. There are many fountains all over Brussels. But then also he's picking out historical places where historical figures have lived. Geoffrey de Bouillon, for example, living, I think, in Liège. He went to the palace. No, the palace is actually in Bouillon, where Geoffrey de Bouillon, the leader of the First Crusade. And maybe they might have had a link also to his, belonging or aspiring to belong to the Knights of Malta. Without the Crusades, without Geoffrey de Bouillon going to the Palestine the first time, the Crusaders would not have been born, right? So the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem would not have existed, probably, had there not been these pilgrimages going there.
Acknowledgement of importance.
The most important figure in the whole text, actually, in the Belgian thing, is Charles V, who is born in Belgium, Emperor Charles V, but he's also the emperor who actually gave Malta to the Knights of St. John. So I don't know whether there are any connections in that. Of course, these people are revered for the power, for the way they managed to control so many peoples and so many countries. But he also is admiring the beauty of the cities, of the buildings, of the Grand Place, of paintings, arts. Rubens, for example, is another figure he mentions. But he also mentions other important Belgian figures who were important. As I said, Charles V is the one that's mentioned more. He describes his armory, his stables. He seems to have this pellegrinaggio, no? He goes and to visit the places, the abodes, the places frequented by famous people. But it also shows that he was quite updated with
he knew not only with he the, knew where to look
where to not only for the with the political figures like Charles the Brave. These are people he all mentions, Philip of Austria, Baldwin, Count of Flanders, and then he always links to some episode in their lives. For example, for him, he's describing the Ghent belfry, and then he says, "Look, there is the gilt-winged dragon brought over by Baldwin, Count of Flanders, etc., etc."
In fact, Ghent, he describes Ghent as one of the most turbulent cities in the world.
Yes, he mentions four turbulent cities in the world, Naples, and amongst them Ghent and Liège. So, and this is again, this is another nice characteristic, which I found, spontaneous characteristic of this particular work, of the memoirs, is that he is so sincere. He says what he feels, which is very unlike Bonamico. Bonamico has written myriads of other things. He's also many literary things. He has got at least three collections of poems in Latin.
Yes, he was a fluent Latin.
He was a fluent Latinist too. Of course, at that time, probably they wrote their thesis in Latin. University must have been a lot of that in Latin. I shudder to think what it would be had it been today, that system. In his works, he's got his Lauree Cotonerie, these poems praising Grandmaster Cotoner, who was then his employer. So some history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. So some bootlicking is also typical.
Never goes amiss.
Of the past only, but we find that in every period of time. He's got his gratulatoris plausis, again gratulatoris, so congratulating plausis, praises. And then he's got his Tristia his Gaudia, sorry, Melitensia. So all these are really encomiastic poems where he's praising in a... They are very courtly poems, right? Ad arte. Written, I don't think there's much feeling, real feeling behind them.
It was the style of the day.
It was the style of the day, but obviously, but not one single critique, not one single complaint, not one single... nothing that went wrong.
Well,
everything
wasn't
was
exactly a
perfect.
Democracy, was it?
In fact, he's also, Bonamico is well known. Probably most people have read Bonamico. Most of our listeners have read it without probably knowing, remembering it, because he, before the discovery of the Cantilena, the Maltese Cantilena by Casciaro, his was the oldest known poem in Maltese, which is again one poem, Meglio Gibiluar Tuzar, praising Grandmaster Cottoner. We have this Cottoner inti daul tainena, minairec shame I see, and so on. It's a bit really power sucking up the power a bit too much. So these memoirs, on the other hand, are the exact opposite.
Refreshing.
They are very refreshing because he says what he feels about the peoples he meets. So he doesn't mind saying the Lejoie, jolly nice people, you know, especially when they drink. It's a nice little thing, but basically he's saying they're sacranazzi. And then he says that they are violent. But it's a nice guy, and they are rowdy, and they are. But it's a nice thing, and he compares them to the people of the south.
Exactly, I remember that. But I was going to tell you.
Yes,
he makes this comparison with the Mediterranean kind of.
And then
way
he starts asking
things.
Also on the genesis, about the genesis of the Lejoie. Why is it that they are so dark?
And
what a
physiognomy! Yes.
And then goes into a, you know, an argument, trying to see why, what the possibilities could be. Some might be scientific, some might be not. Just like the philologist in him comes out too. He gives the etymology of, for example, Liège, where it came from Leotium in Latin, Luis in High Dutch, Luch. He gives the various interpretations which were given in the past. Same thing for Bruggen, that he gives the right thing, which says this comes from Bruggen, which means bridge. Bouge.
Makes sense.
And it makes a lot of sense, and it is actually like that. So you can see that this man who was interested in various things in life, obviously he must have been very much into, say, politics, in the sense of the politics of the court, to be able to survive with the grandmaster. He died young, 41. Well, I'm curious to know why, how, etc. But I don't know.
Well, something. I suppose at that time,
one thing would be it also to
life discover, expectancy
to discover more about his life, and his when he, especially the years he spent abroad. We have very little, I think, on that. Giovanni Mangione has done the most comprehensive biography of Bonamico, but there are these gaps obviously abroad. And amongst other things, which he wrote was also Il Trattato della Cioccolata, which is again another, let's say, artistic but scientific to this writing, where he's a 19-page manuscript which Giovanni Bonello had recuperated. Found in a private collection, and he's here extolling the virtues of chocolate, which, and especially from the medical point of view too, because in those times they believed that chocolate had medical properties. Even today they say, no, yes. It's against, I don't know, cholesterol or...
Black chocolate's good
black,
for you.
Always and black chocolate.
And which,
no.
That would have been black chocolate,
and
obviously,
at that time,
that time.
I suppose it would have been like that. And according to Giovanni de Bonello, it's the first extensive treatise on chocolate. Remember, chocolate was discovered in America, so and brought over to Europe. So you can see the various facets of this multifaceted character.
One of the things that struck me as I was reading the book was, okay, we're talking 350 years ago, which I suppose isn't that long ago, but it seemed terribly modern. I mean, it was a Europe that one could recognize.
It's a Europe that's one.
Ports.
Yes, this is the city centres, the town centres, and indeed, I think that should give us, an inkling on the importance of the maintenance of cultural heritage, of city cores, of town cores. I mean, a place like Belgium, survived, is famous apart from the European Union and whatnot today because of its the towns in Flanders. They have maintained their character, and this is important. I mean, even as Maltese, when we see all the flooding and because of the reckless building of the past 30, 40, 50 years, we should appreciate how important it is to have our Imdinas, our Senglias, our Birgus, and our Città del Langozzo, etc. Mm-hmm. In a way, there's the continuity with the past. Mm-hmm. In Bonamico, as you said, it seems as if it were today, right? As if travel in the city cores of Belgian towns today. He actually highlighted what were much smaller cities at that time. Obviously, these cities grew much more.
But if you look at some of the maps that you put into the book, every time he speaks about a particular town you try to put in an ancient, old map.
Of the times.
More or less of the times. And that made it all the more real. I mean, there's one of 1695 map of Brussels with picture of the bombardment of Brussels in 1695. But you can really see, obviously, there's the suburbs now have grown.
Of course.
Basically, you can sort of recognize
the city centres are there. It's the same thing with Valletta, for example, or Imdina, most of it, no? Or the Città del Langozzo, where you have the originals, more or less. And it's important to preserve that. I mean, people like, I think, Bonamico should, or at least the effect on me is that they make me go further towards the past. That's what we started off on talking about this topic, you know, to appreciate more the past and to realize that that past is indeed of enormous value, not only historically, culturally, but even economically. I mean, just imagine. Just the preservation of the past is such an investment for a country like us in tourism and so on. If we just imagine, of course, there's an outlay to keep these things going, but it's important that you have, and it's important that you have people who can testify to these things. Sometimes for things that are no longer there. Had we not had maps, travelers, accounts of people, we would not know of certain buildings, of certain issues that happened in the past, which would have been long lost had it not been for these people.
What amazes me as well about this 8 years is
the 8 years is in Europe.
Huh? In Europe, in the whole trip.
In Belgium, he was there 2-3 years. Yes.
So you said Italy, France,
Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands.
Went
around Central Europe, I would say, mm-hmm. at that time, and then Southern Europe, Central and Southern. And this gives you an impression. Is this the grand tour of a Maltese, of a Southerner? Because going to Italy, Sicily, that's all Maltese intellectuals went to Sicily, Italy. To become an intellectual, you had to go there to study. You could not get a degree in Malta. You could not become a lawyer. You could not become a notary. You could not become a priest many times. Huh? So many of these people did go there. But to go to Central Europe, that's quite unique for... And I suppose opposites attract, no? The grass is always greener. That's life. So coming from the south...
Well, the travel must have been quite difficult. He gives
us a description, a very nice description. He used to travel by carriage most of the time. It was dangerous. For crossing the Ardennes, he waited.
The description of the forest really amazing. Right?
And he waited for a long time until he got other people because he wouldn't want to go through the forest at night.
Probably had bandits
and all that sort of. But the most pleasant thing was coming from Ghent, I think, from Ghent to Brussels or from Ghent to somewhere else, I don't remember exactly where it's through the canals, through the Belgian canals, the canals that still exist today, these enormous boats, which were dragged, pulled by horses. But so you had the boat in the canal, very narrow canals, and you had the horses on land pulling. So it took him about 4 hours to get, I think, from Ghent to and he describes this boat, which had four classes. You know, airplanes, they have business first and economy. They had four here. And he says how you have the four classes of cabins, and then in each, so he was seemed to be in business in the most expensive one. From what that's why it's another thing why you can gather that he must have been quite well off. And then at 12 o'clock they lay out the tables, different in the four different sections. So even the food is obviously the first. I suppose they got the beer and the champagne only in the business class. and he was very happy because he had La Compagnia di Due Belle Donne down there talking. So he must have been also a cultured person and you know, interested in traveling, in writing, in politics probably, and in medicine and so on. He also enjoyed the pleasure of pleasant company.
But he didn't have time for a family, it seems.
It doesn't seem so, no. But who knows what he did in those 8 years over there. I haven't seen anything written about that. And the only thing is this about these due belle dame, whom he enjoyed talking to very much on the... So the trip passed, you know, really.
The only picture of him that we have is the one which may not even be a true portrait of his. It's found in the old university, the Valletta campus, I think.
Yes, it's one of those portraits where you go in the hallway, in the corridor, right?
There's a sort of description of him underneath. I mean, but not a very handsome man by the looks of it,
I think it's very subjective, no?
Yes, I suppose that, so. I suppose so. I take that all back.
He looks like a normal person to me.
Not my type. But anyway, but certainly my type from every other point of view, because he really does sound like an absolutely fascinating man. Thank you very much, Professor Arnold Cassola.
Thanks to you.
For coming to talk to us about Giovan Francesco Buonamico.
And I hope
today.
The listeners have discovered somebody new, maybe. And, of course, it's available from the bookshops.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thanks again.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.